Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I am Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I am Ken Napshock.
And this is the Mandalorian Report. Oh no, Ken has been replaced by a grizzled weirdo. A wizened little wizard man.
Which is just my favorite thing on the show all the time. Oh, so many wonderful grizzled wizened weirdos.
Grizzled wizened weirdos. And like last week, every week we do our best grizzled weirdo moments. And I feel so bad that I missed a grizzled weirdo moment from chapter two, and I saw it because it's highlighted in the recap for chapter three of when the Jawas are saying suka suka. That Quill does the classic gesture of like rubbing his eyebrows, like the oh god, this situation is giving me a tension headache. grizzled weirdo moment. There's going to be many. I can't remember what it was. There was something this weekend where my wife was like, "Well, we got to do that first," and I was like, "Suka." She's like, "The hell are you talking about?" Like, it's now what I'm going to say every time. Like, well, we're going to a show, but we have to stop at the liquor store. It's a side quest. It's suka.
And suka indeed.
Suka indeed. Well, we are going to get into this. This is the Mandalorian Report. Every week we are doing a breakdown, a discussion, a review, a freak out about the latest episode of The Mandalorian. We are now talking about Chapter 3, the sin. So we usually start with just kind of an overall reaction. So I just want to start with the earliest part of the episode, in some ways, the title.
Love that title.
Right?
I'm glad you highlighted that. I love that title. It feels very Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2 to me, and not to bring Tarantino into it, but it just was like, ooh, because and I'll talk about it, like, there's a lot of things in this episode where you're like, yeah, no, this probably, you knew this was going to happen. It probably had to happen. It's the hows and the whys, not the what. And so when that came up, I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
Yeah.
So I was excited.
I feel like it retroactively makes the child more interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
In general, I love that they have chapter names and using chapter because it does so signal the adventure serial aspect of Star Wars.
Absolutely.
But the child, and obviously Baby Yoda, but you can also think, like, is that, are we talking about the Mandalorian? How much is he still motivated by who he was when he was a child?
Yeah.
But the sin is great because it is pretty, it is asking you to go, well, which sin?
Yeah.
What is the sin? Because it's not a fistful of sins. It is the sin. For you, what was the sin?
Well, you know what? I'm going to say my gut reaction is the sin that was committed by the Mandalorian, because sin against the guild, breaking guild rules. However, you could argue the sin was whatever was done or is there trying to do to Baby Yoda, or the sin might have been the Mandalorian's past and the Purge. Maybe that was the sin. Maybe that's the sin. I go to the Mandalorian, though. This is a sin against the rules of what he is supposed to do.
Oh, wow. I think this title is going to be like a great Rorschach test.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
I think you listed a lot of great possible sins. This episode's loaded with sins.
Yeah.
There's breaking the guild code. There's he gets, yelled at by the other Mandalorian about sitting with Imperials.
Yes.
Working for Imperials at all. And I don't know if people can pick it up, but there are sirens by my apartment.
Literally down your street.
Which makes me feel even more sinful. Like, they're coming for us. They're coming for us. Anyway, but for me, I think going to the core of what I feel the show is about, he's got Mandalorian rules. He's got guild rules. But he's got to be true to himself as well. And for me, I think the sin is handing over Baby Yoda when he knows. It's not a, after the fact, I realize it. As soon as he is getting off his ship, and they do such a great storytelling job of the stormtroopers grabbing him and him saying, be careful with that. And that look from Baby Yoda as he floats into the other room, like, you really going to leave me here? All right. Everything about it to me, like, this is about him recognizing what to him is a sin and correcting it.
I like it, too. I like what you're saying, because one sin usually leads to another.
Yeah.
So, like you said, a lot of sins floating around.
The best option in a sinful selection. Yeah,
but I get behind what you're saying, because it's no secret, right? Going back to episode one, when he puts his hand out to touch the finger of the child, like, there's this connection. You know the feel. So it plays out so well. And you're right. It's weighing on him right from the beginning.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the imagery from him as a kid, the flashback that got a little bit more detailed, that makes me feel even more like that's what he's connecting to. In terms of other overall reaction, what were some other big picture things that you loved about this particular episode?
I loved...
didn't like. I shouldn't, be loaded.
I think some of the Mandalorians flying is clumsy. How about that? I'll start there. But no, I loved the action. We've got a lot of action with the Jawas. The shootout at the end, a very Western style. But also Deborah Chow today just was an interview of the Kung Fu films from her father's past.
Oh, wow.
And bringing that into it. And then also a lot of John Wick, I thought, was
in, oh, God, in, yeah. In this that. I think this was real parallel thinking, right?
Yes.
Because I think Favreau has been worked on this for a long time. And the fact that it is.
Yeah.
Here's the end of John Wick 2, pretty much. Yeah.
I was waiting for Ian McShane's Excommunicado. Otto.
Oh, Ian McShane is really missing from this for the collection of grizzled weirdos.
So I liked a lot of the overall, just the big action going on, but it always goes to those cores, themes we talk about, and there's a moment we'll dive into with the client that was just my favorite moment of him basically really, really challenging the Mandalorian by saying Mandalorians are hard to find and not, I mean, literally, yes, but just this, like, I know there's a code, and you're not that. You're a dirty little bounty hunter doing dirty little things, and I just love those big themes that are present throughout.
I think I loved the amount of violence, because is one of the reasons that we like Star Wars. It's called Star Wars. It is about conflict. It is a large attraction to Star Wars has always been these fascinating, mysterious, but just cool-looking, aesthetically pleasing characters fighting. And this show is having so much fun with those action figure moments of here's a Boba Fett versus a bunch of stormtroopers taking him down with a wild amount of fun variety.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that, but what I was really affected by the first time I was watching it is what a nice feeling it is to be so, at least for me, morally on the side of the Mandalorian when he's about to do a bunch of violence. Because it was sort of like, oh, well, we're watching a war, and like, there's a lot in Star Wars that is, it's the good side versus the dark side. But this is just so, the way the story is being told, you are not being asked to feel any empathy for the client or his scummy remnant stormtroopers. To see the Mandalorian go, all right, actually, no, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to rescue an innocent child from whatever bizarre horror, and that is why I'm burning stormtroopers alive and smashing them in the face and, you know, choking them and stabbing them in the back. Like, so to be on board with super interesting, visually cool, surprising Star Wars violence and also feel like I am morally with the reasons the Mandalorian is doing this.
Yeah, I like that, because there's one moment where I think Dr. Pershing is begging for that kind of compassion, empathy, and, hey, I'm not all bad. And it's like, well, just the fact that you're already doing what you're doing, you don't earn it.
Yeah.
You don't earn it.
And but Mando doesn't
kill him.
Doesn't kill him.
And then when I see stormtroopers burned, I think, oh, this the Star Wars Joseph Scrimshaw has been waiting for.
Burn those stormtroopers. I also, another big picture reaction was each chapter feels very similar, very of a piece. Like it's just building the story, but it is having this great bit of being distinctive. And chapter two very much felt like we're diving into who the Mandalorian is and this fun tale of a guy just like, I'm just trying to get a job done, bonding with Baby Yoda. Of course, we're continuing with the Mando character, but chapter three felt like so much on purpose. Here we are going to dump a bunch of world building.
Yeah.
We're going to let you know a little bit more about how these people feel about the New Republic, how this Mandalorian group works and what their deal is and why. What are the possibilities of Baby Yoda in the perception of the Empire? There is so much world building while still being small and contained and insular.
Absolutely. A lot of those guild rules we were talking about, a lot about how that works. Even just in story. Now we know. I kept asking the question of who sent all the bounty hunters to get him, and it's like, oh, the answer is pretty simple. It's the client and Greef Karga did it.
The client,
okay. Sometimes this is why we don't overthink things. Just the answer will unfold. But again, show world, like the plot world building of just like, now we get to extract the materials you need, and I can't protect you, and you know, what's Pershing say, blank blank wants us to bring him back, like all those little, like, all right, now I really feel this episode was exploding into the second act of this film that we got.
Right, here are some answers and here are some more questions.
Yes,
which is very, very nice. All right, so you already mentioned one of your favorite things. So you have a favorite big thing, favorite small thing. What is it? You wanted to talk about that Mandalorian, that line about Mandos are more rare than the steel.
Yeah, because there's this literal level discussion point where, you know, they are. They're gone. The Great Purge, whatever exactly happened. We're getting more of a sense of what happened. The Empire had a lot to do with it.
I think that's a pretty literal line of they shattered our world.
Yeah.
I don't think that they mean that in the same way people like, that kiss rocked my world. Yeah. I don't think it's metaphorical. I think they literally shattered Mandalore in some way.
The angry hand of the Empire smashed into Mandalore. So we're getting those answers, but the idea that we talked a lot with Quill, just really challenging, but going back to episode one of just challenging him to be who you're born to be.
Yeah, so, ride the Mythosaur.
Ride the Mythosaur. Blurg it out, baby. so to have the client who seems to be not necessarily specifically aware of the Mando, but just overall, just like you're a Mandalorian who's a bounty hunter. You've been on the run. The Empire destroyed your people. Your Beskar is now my credits, you know. And for him to really say to him, Mandalorians are a lot harder to find these days, isn't just, again, they're hiding over there. It is, you know, can you be a Mandalorian and all that honor and the code and the warlike thing, too? I really want to discuss Mandalorian culture a little bit in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. We got some canon section, and we'll dive deep into that.
Really important. And I just love that moment. I love our hero being challenged because these delicious shades of gray we always talk about loving and needing in some stories and everything. The more I watch this show, and you touched upon it a little bit with what you said, we're not rooting for the Empire here, or sad sack stormtroopers, like I call them, with droopy armor butts. There's no gray area in Mandalorian, in the Mandalorian to me. He has had to take this job or this path to survive, and maybe he's disconnected. But with the flashbacks and keeping to his culture, trying to keep his, like, to me, it's not so much good and bad, but you know what I mean? Like, he's not going around the galaxy going, it's okay to kill babies or something like that. He already knows.
Right.
And it's just about him finally being bold enough to be out and about with that to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I love that line.
Yeah, I like that line on so many levels, and I think you're right that there are great surface levels and there are great depth levels, and that surface level of just telling us, the audience, of we are confirming to the audience there aren't a whole world full of Mandalorians that they have actually been whittled down, which, you know, combines then with the they shattered our world and we learn more about them being in hiding, all that surface level stuff that we will talk about.
Right.
But, you know, you want to think about why the client is saying these things, right? And why he's painting him in Beskar.
Yeah.
And it is that just great, gross, emotional manipulation of like, well, I've heard you're the best and I'm going to compliment you because you're so good. I'm going to hire you because you're so good and I'm going to dangle what you truly want, the Beskar. But I'm going to be sure that it also has the Imperial seal on it and tell you, oh, it's too bad. This should really be in the right hands. And all this emotional manipulation came down to me. That line felt like it was getting ahead of the hunter and prey theme. Of like, I'm going to damn you with false praise and compliment you for being such a badass Mandalorian. But what I'm really reminding you is the Empire broke you physically. We broke your world. I think we killed many of your people and we broke your spirit.
Yeah.
You're not a real Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Like, can't actually find many of you, like, actually living.
Yeah.
And the ones who are still under our boot.
Yeah.
We are better than you. But thanks for doing such a great job. Thanks. You're really great.
Here's an ice cream maker.
And just the threat, too, of, like, you know.
Yeah.
Look, if you break the guild code, you don't have any leverage. You don't have any way to move. So it sets up, you know, the strength of his choices, going back to, you know, we talked about early on when we found out that George Lucas visited the set and Favreau said, hey, I asked George, you know, his advice. And he reminded me, it's always about lessons for 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And this is just such a great classic. Mm-hmm. Him saying, like, you're not who you think you are on a deep personal level. You don't have the power you think you have on a real physical, actual world level. Yeah. So just stay in line.
Yeah.
And then the Mando going, nah, I think I'm going to step out of line because it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I want to pick that thread back up. I want to pick that because I want to hear your favorite moment.
Just a like small detail moment. And this is one of those I think like, oh, yeah, you could see it coming. But it was just fun for me to see is, you know, obviously the world is losing their mind about Yoda Baby and the depth of his emotional reactions. But Yoda Baby just knowing, like, especially if you know he's Force sensitive, just these are bad people.
Yeah.
Like, I love his little ears flapping as he's going down the street.
Oh, God.
And it's like Yoda Baby with his head out of his baby basket, like a dog out the window with the ears flapping. But then as soon, like, and just taking it all in. Yeah. I'm like, what is this? Where am I?
Yeah.
And then, boom, these are bad boom. People. And that his little eyes just, you know, his brow froze just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just knowing these are bad people right away. I love that little detail because it just emotionally so gets you on the side of like,
yeah,
don't give the baby to the assholes.
Yeah. Well, the very clear choice in episodes now 2 and 3 to see things from Baby Yoda's point of view,
yeah,
is really interesting to me.
Yeah, sometimes physically, definitely emotionally,
and that look for the stormtroopers, and but that ear flapping moment's my favorite small moment. Watching it with my girlfriend Grace, she burst into tears, like cute tear, like the
yeah,
she
like,
so loves
too much. Yeah,
like we'll watch a Nat Geo dog show, and she'll cry all the way through it because she loves dogs so much. That little flapping ear moment, she just started to cry.
Yeah,
because it was just so cute. It's amazing.
Driving home the innocence, right? Because you can get into all of these discussions. Well, like, well, who has what code? And well, the Empire did maintain order, so that and all of that just shatters when you see something totally innocent and intuitive.
Yeah,
it's just like, I'm not going to go to your panel at a convention that maybe the Empire was right. They're evil, and I sense it, because I am an innocent, intuitive creature, right? But my bias.
What the Empire can do for you.
And I understand, but that to me is the power. And I think that's the thing with Mando, is he could get caught up in, like, the Bounty Hunter Code, the truth of the Empire's station versus my station, the New Republic is a joke, and the baby's intuitive emotional responses cuts through all that and just gets back to humanity.
Side note, in modern canon, we hear a lot of this, hey, you know, some of the stormtroopers didn't know, and there's a working man, Bodhi Rook, and all those kind of things, and you know, this heroes on both sides kind of conversation. If you really, really watch and read, almost every time those characters with that point of view come to a realization that the Empire is wrong.
Yes.
And I think that's forgotten. Yes. Ray Sloth, Sienna Ree, Bodhi Rook, a lot of the Alphabet Squadron characters. Yeah. There's a lot of times of, I didn't know. We were on the Death Star. I was just doing my job. They blew up Alderaan? Oh, that ain't good.
That's really quite bad. Yeah.
Side note, it's just a bigger conversation.
Really, yeah.
It might come into play here.
The remnant stormtroopers, from my perspective, like, you really can leave now.
Yeah.
Right? You're not stuck in a galaxy utterly controlled by this. You could go, like, you could desert pretty easy.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I think one of my favorite big things, there's so many different big ideas and themes, and we will talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the small thread that becomes big of the Mandos deciding to be stronger together.
Yes.
Because heavy infantry Mando, who I believe people spotted in the credits.
Paz Vizsla.
Paz Vizsla, which everybody thought he sounded like Favreau, and I did as well. So anyway, that his argument for what the Mandalorian should be is not just about the hiding, but that our strength used to be our numbers.
Yeah.
And I love having that. It would have been a cool moment no matter what when all of the Mandalorians showed up.
Yeah.
And that they backed the main Mando's play. Mm. But the fact that it was teed up with, hey, we disagree about where we should be going. In my perspective is we're stronger together. It's once again one of those moments that super cool on the surface, but also, you know, you dig into what it means and, you know, the Mandalorians can be seen as badasses or bounty hunters, you know, but just again, that simple message of we're stronger together. We're stronger when we don't hide. We're stronger when we stand up and go, nope.
Yeah.
You know, so I cheered so much alone in my home at, you know, 12:30 at night, not only because it was a ton of Mandalorians live action flying and blasting.
Yeah.
But because it had been set up. That how that decision got made and that it would be a debate among that group.
There's so much juicy goodness in the armorer scenes this time around. I mean, there was the first time around. Everything you said, we could really dive into and how it sets up the stakes for you know, what they, you know, our secrecy is our survival. Our survival is our strength. Is one of the things said at one point. So to blow that secrecy for the sake of this cause, and then I think you just kind of touched upon it. I don't necessarily know if they are like, yeah, it's, we're going to save the baby and him. They're like, he is making the choice as a Mandalorian, and we are going to support that choice.
Yes.
And
yes.
And it was like really heavy stuff. Or you could just say cool flying action.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk a lot about more about the hunter and prey thing, but it goes to the hunter and prey thing too, of like, that was a moment where the main Mando made himself the prey.
Yeah.
And the rest of the Mando's like, nah. Yeah. let's let him be a hunter right now.
Yeah.
I would not argue that this was necessarily a super purposeful theme, but I like the connection between the Mandalorian gets his shiny new armor in the same episode where the so much emotionally hinges on Baby Yoda being fascinated by a shiny ball.
Shiny ball.
And just the connection between like just that literal shiny imagery being a big part of the episode.
I love, I don't know if you want to dive in, but I love, there's a line that he says again in that sequence where he says, my armor has lost its integrity.
Yeah.
And I obviously know what integrity means in, you know, my tacos and burritos sometimes lose their integrity when they collapse in my hands. But for him to just to say it so plainly after just being challenged by the client.
Yeah.
And then for him to kind of be like, bathe me in Mandalorian and I'm going to walk around proud.
Yes. Yes. We're definitely going to do that. I think that is such a big part of it, of that idea of being seen. So we'll dive into that. Because we are often legitimately fans of things and we discuss it from that point. Sometimes every once in a while, people are like, do they dislike anything?
Yeah.
So I'll throw something out.
Okay.
That I like the spirit of the salute at the end, but in the great Star Wars debate of what is too real world for you, which is different for everyone, the literal straight up salute was too real world for me. I like the sentiment, but I wished it had been some sort of like different, something that had that spirit. There's such a history in sci-fi of different ways that like, oh, that's clearly a gesture of honor.
Yeah.
The straight up like, enjoy your hot dogs on 4th of July.
Salute.
And I know it's in canon already and all that.
Yeah.
But for me, it is like, I would have liked a different salute. That's my deep criticism of this episode.
Well, it ties to like, there's so much great practical stuff, including Baby Yoda in this. So I get it. I get how the hot dog is made here. There was a little bit of unintentional laughter on my part when the Mandos were landing. It was like Mary Poppins in the 60s, like Julie Andrews landing. And then that scene at the end, Grace, again, her and I watching it. This is my second time watching it. Her first, she laughed at that scene, not in a good way.
In the salute, in particular.
Yeah. She laughed. That is what it is. I'm with you, too.
Yeah.
It stood out. I like the line, I need to get me one of those.
Oh, yes, that was a great line. Yeah. But for those of you, we have such great listeners on Force Center who want the positivity, and the positivity is honest. You'll never hear fake positivity from us. But sometimes people are, do you dislike anything? So there you go. For our fans who want us to dislike something, the salute in spirit worked, in execution did not work for me personally.
Moving on.
So I wanted to talk about canon effects, canon revelations. When I added this to our list of how we were going to go about discussing the episodes, I thought that this section might be a little lighter, but this episode, there are a ton of impacts on larger Star Wars canon and revelations. So let's walk through some of them. We got, of course, the Cam Tono, the famous ice cream maker.
Yes.
How you feeling about all that?
Great choice. It's one of those, like, I don't need those answers, but I love those answers. When he pulled it out, because I think that it was an Instagram post from Favreau a long time ago.
That he posted that it was going to be in use. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was great. It was great. And then, that's your answer. Will Rowe was taking his
holder.
Money.
Yeah. His money, or who knows, his family jewels.
Maybe ice cream on the inside. We don't know.
He could have had very valuable ice cream.
But it was fun.
And I'm sure many people have done this deep dive, but for those who haven't, Cam Tono is the name of the thing, and it gets reinforced because it's mentioned in an earlier chapter and again in this chapter in a different context of, why don't you just take a Cam Tono of spice? and you'll have a good time, says Greef Karga. But Cam Tono apparently comes from this viral video where a father is trying to get his young daughter to repeat, I want ice cream, And for some inexplicable reason, she says, I want, she repeats I and want, and then instead of ice cream, every time she says Camtono. Totally inexplicable.
There you go.
So there are layers and layers if you want to dig. All right. So in terms of canon, this isn't really a revelation, but it's the first time it's directly addressed in the show. The mention of the New Republic that Greef Karga throws out, like, well, if you have a problem with the Imperials, you know, warlords being active and doing weird stuff to some baby, you can go back to the core and tell it to the New Republic. Yeah. And his response, that's a joke. So what was your take on that?
Love that. Love that. Talk about the State of the Galaxy. We always talk about that and the world building, et cetera, et cetera. Loved it. It was Greef Karga, the way his tone was and the response. And this is, it's interesting because it's 5 years after.
Right.
And it's still a struggle. And this is the realistic approach to the, hey, we won, we danced with the Ewoks, then what? If you're continuing the story, and I saw someone tweet out, actually it was in an article about, yo, Disney destroyed Luke Skywalker's victory at Endor and the Rebellion's victory by making it hard now, you know, the First Order and the New Republic struggling. I'm like, what kind of storytelling do you want if Greef Karga had said, go tell it to the New Republic? Oh, yeah, they're the best. Things are working great. Like, what?
Yeah.
So it was a deep moment for me. Not surprising to if you've been paying attention to Aftermath and Alphabet Squadron and all those things, Bloodlines even. So I like that a lot.
Yeah. And I think I understand the people who are like, hey, I liked when the original trilogy ended and it was a bit of a fairy tale ending of, and they lived happily ever after and things were better. Hey, if you're in that world, great. I understand. But for me, I even had a little bit of that when this project was first announced. But what I like is that the New Republic is doing great.
Yeah.
In the core. And they would probably resolve something like this in the core. And if it turned out that Werner Herzog is a Sith Lord, Luke would address that, right? But this is all about, we're telling a smaller story in a faraway part of the galaxy, and the New Republic is not big enough to handle every little thing.
The Empire wasn't either. There's still those parts in the stories of, the Empire doesn't know this is here. The Empire hasn't got here yet, or the Empire doesn't know what to do with this. Like that comes up a lot. And so it would track that the New Republic has even... they're trying to stand on their feet even more than the Empire was. So it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And especially if we know that the New Republic is like, well, we don't really want to be militant. So it's 5 years in. So that debate is really raging of like, okay, well, what are they going to do? And the Mando has a complicated history with every government. Yeah. Anyway, so moving on. Extract what you need. Let's talk about extract what you need. So that, I just liked having the Mandalorian's blaster that people have been joking about looking like a tuning fork since the holiday special. Seemed to be, because I kind of took it as like it was, because he's pointing the blaster.
Yeah.
And which he could just be covering it, but I kind of took it as that's a little bit of a sonic device that is allowing him to hear through.
Yeah, this is a Swiss Army knife of a gun here.
Very impressive weapon, as Greef Karga says later.
Yeah. I love that because, you know, the choices they have made in this series thus far, we'll see if that changes, of we only get information if the Mandalorian hears it. We got the most we've ever got. We got, like, this conversation with that dust-breathing bounty hunter in Greef Karga. But Mandalorian's always like a step away from those scenes. Quill, we saw a little bit of him. So everything needs to come to Mandalorian's ears for us to hear it or pick it up. And so this was a really fun device for me of like, okay, we got a little info. Not all of it.
Well, and also just like, again, with Hunter and Prey, seeing him hunt.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm trying to get as much information as I can before I go in there so I can be strategic about them. And I'm stalking them.
Yeah.
But the specific... you mentioned it. We get the snippets of dialogue. We get just extract what you need and let's go. We were told to bring him in alive.
Yeah.
They want them alive.
Blank explicitly ordered us to bring it back.
Blank alive. Explicitly. Yeah, okay, great, great. So we didn't actually hear the them or he or she or they. And then I can no longer protect you.
Yes.
From the client, right?
Mm.
I think all that's juicy, and I think a lot of that is going to come flying out. But extract what you need.
Yes.
What various wild theories of your own do you felt were confirmed or denied by that phrase, extract what you need from Baby Yoda?
It's really hard to turn away from the clone angle because of the Kamino clone patch and all that stuff. It's really hard for me to return away from that. And I'm not a super, super fan of the clone ideas. We've talked about that a lot. I like clone troopers. That's all I'm good for. But because it's kind of tied into that, these theories going around of, well, you know, at some point, Yoda was tested for midichlorians. Does the Jedi Temple have that on record? Did the Empire get in control of that? Do they have those records?
Is this he is a clone of Yoda theory?
Or could be a clone. Like, I still don't think it's Baby Yoda specifically, though, you know, Lucasfilm, other than, well, Disney's trying to pull all the gifts out of the galaxy now and claiming copyright on those gifts.
Yeah, the Baby Yoda is sadly out of the floating baby bucket, even in Europe, I think.
Yeah, and I do wonder, some of it's big business and frustrating, but sometimes I'm just like, sort of like, oh man, this is being spoiled everywhere. Like, we need to like clamp it down on this one, but that's a different conversation. So I am leaning towards not Yoda, but they want to take this thing and make more of them.
Yeah. I think the clone of Baby Yoda makes perfect sense in Star Wars. I wonder about where it gets us narratively.
Yeah.
Of like, is it intriguing for us as fans? But this like goes to like that whole conversation of, well, Rey being Kenobi's granddaughter makes sense, but you got, what does that mean emotionally? And how do you explain that in a way that impacts the story? So I do wonder of like, well, what it would mean to Mando?
Yeah.
If, you know, I know there's a theories that, you know, maybe he was rescued by Yoda. We're going to talk about that. But to me, the extract what you need combined with a lot of people didn't seem to care whether it was alive or dead. Dr. Pershing's trying to keep it alive, maybe for moral reasons, maybe for science reasons. Maybe there's the idea of like, we can get what we need from its corpse. And Dr. Pershing like, no, we do need it alive. Yeah. Maybe scientifically, maybe morally. I am wondering if we're heading toward a story where we've got Moff Gideon is the warlord kind of above the client.
Right.
And that he's got some mad scheme to give himself force powers.
I like that idea, and I was going to say, my guess on blank is Moff Gideon.
Yeah.
Again, going to sometimes the simple answer is what it's going to be. That makes, if you're trying to recapture the glory of the Empire and you need a tool, that could be interesting.
Yeah, because the nature of the Empire, the nature of the Sith, the nature of a warlord who's hanging on 5 years after,
right,
would not necessarily be like, I want a bunch of little green force atomic bomb weapons. Yeah. It would be more selfish. It would be, I have found these relics. I have heard these rumors. The reason Palpatine was powerful is he had these abilities.
Yeah.
I want them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to just direct them. I want them to be mine, which gets into some really interesting sort of early in science fiction. You know, Frankenstein novel is described as the first science fiction novel, and it has all these themes of like, can you manipulate, you know, life in that way? So to have Star Wars play with that, I really trust these storytellers to play with like having that be a cool story, and also having to be like, that's not how the Force works. You can't take the Force from the baby and give it to yourself. But it sure makes sense for them to try, narratively.
If you're high up ranking in the Empire, I don't know, maybe you don't even know Palpatine's true nature, but you knew Vader.
Yeah.
And you knew what that did. And if you're like, hey, I'm trying to reestablish this on my own, that's an interesting theory of like, inject it.
Right.
Put it in me.
Or somebody in Moff Gideon's age is like, I am aware of the Jedi.
Yes.
That was suppressed, but that's all true.
Yeah.
And I want that.
Yeah.
Is really, really interesting to me.
It's an interesting theory.
All right, let's get into all the juicy Mandalorian scene.
Absolutely.
So we have the literal description of the Empire shattered our world, which you take that literally as I do, or do you have a different take?
No, I take that literally. I think that's the Great Purge. I think we talked about going in, and you were the one who really, really highlighted some of the early comments of the client, where you're just like, well, the way he's talking here, something went down. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
At the end of Rebels, with Bo-Katan and the Darksaber and the Mandalorian, army sort of rising up in a way.
Right.
And it's pretty fully functional. Like, you know, the Empire had their Gar Saxon and everybody overseeing it. They're, you know, it's a functioning society, a functioning army, if you will. Yeah. So the Empire would be, number one, pissed.
Yes.
And two, crap, we can't have them join.
Yes. Especially
just for the strategic sense.
That's happening just as the rebellion is exploding into full bloom, right, with Scarif, yep. Right? It's happening so close together. So you can see Scarif happening. You can see, yep. like, Death Star happening and going, all right, if the Death Star hadn't been destroyed,
yeah.
Mandalore, we're pointing this big gun at you. It's what it's for, to control systems.
Yeah.
So maybe they would have done that to keep Mandalore in line. But failing that, some other horrific thing
yeah.
to, I think, really, really whittle down surviving Mandalorians.
Yeah, and you get a sense that it isn't just
and take a home away from them.
Yeah, literally. And what we have here with the armorer and these Mandos, it seems to be like a collection of tribes and houses and clans. Like, you know, I don't get a sense it's all House Vizsla down there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Foundlings and everything. So that they're all trying to band together now, when we've seen in Rebels specifically the different houses and clans and whatnot. And obviously Southern Clone Wars too. I don't even know if it's just a big battle and they lost, like something
yeah.
went down that's a little bit more nefarious. I don't know. I'm not quite poisoning everyone on Geonosis level, but, like, yeah. you know, you just get a sense of something.
Yeah, I feel like there's room for, you know, so much storytelling of, like, the Empire experimenting with just different hugely destructive devices.
Yeah.
Just because the Death Star isn't there doesn't mean they don't have a lot of other hell to unleash.
Yeah.
Could just be, here's 500 Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 yeah, boom, yeah. boom on the planet. The general society ideas that are laid out by the armor in the Mandalorian describes this as the covert, right?
That's, yeah.
So he uses covert. The, you know, we often hear that as a different word, but it really using it as a noun.
Yeah.
The rules that she lays out, my take was that these are maybe some collection of old Mandalorian rules, but also taking that sense of honor, taking that sense of unity, taking that sense of the old identity of Mandalore, but also having new rules for this new situation.
Mm, yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of discussion back and forth of, like, well, how does that match up with Classic? How does that match up with Death Watch? How does that match up with where Bo-Katan left off with the Darksaber? And to me, it's like, I think maybe some of these things are... It's possible that some of these things are new.
Right.
Or we're going to readopt something from thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Like the never taking your helmet off seems to me to be something either new or brought back from the deep past.
And I agree with you because I didn't. Yeah. And there's a lot of think pieces going around about going against some of the established canon. No, because Filoni's involved. Filoni would be the one to go.
Yeah.
No, Bo-Katan, Sabine Wren, the helmets have come off. Now, on home worlds, helmets are off. In fact, we saw in the Clone Wars, they got streetwear. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's the big part of Satine's, like, let's put this in the past.
Yeah. So some old coming back, something new going forward, some kind of different belief, maybe because they have no home right now, and just also public facing, you know. I mean, they don't, in this little secret little place, they all have their helmets on.
Yeah.
So I get that. But, like, basically saying, hey, when you leave this place here, your helmet... It makes me think of the Greyjoy. Did you pay the iron price or the gold price? Did you take it or did you pay for it? And so it's this kind of reverse thing of, like, no one, did anyone take your helmet off? No. Did you take it off? No. Great. That's how it should be. Unless you lose, your helmet comes off, you are shamed.
Yeah.
You are not, you've lost your Dothraki braid. I'm going really deep into Game of Thrones here. So I took it as something relatively new and exciting to learn about.
Yeah. I took it as a decision by this leader, this group, of this is how we're going to be safe going forwards. Because you look at Sabine, right? Who's certainly somebody who is, you know, in history is near the time where Satine, not Sabine, said, let's lay this all aside. Death Watch was obviously like, no, let's not.
Right.
But then with Sabine and her whole family, you get this very fully fleshed out of, like, if we could live the way we want to, it's with honor. And we value art. in music. And here we built a statue of Tar Vizsla, and we appreciate the history of the Darksaber. And so Sabine goes on that great speech about we are our armor, and other people have worn this armor through the past, but I have remade it to my own. So there's this more fleshed out view of what a Mandalorian can be, like that the armor is a part of you, but so is your family, so is your art, so is this. And then the world is shattered, both, I think, literally and metaphorically. And I could see somebody like the armor gathering up a group of survivors and saying, we don't, we that soft side, the art and the music and the culture, that's gone. We're going all in on We Are the Armor.
Yeah.
To the point, you don't take it off. You don't ever let anybody see your face.
Yeah.
Because that your face isn't who you are. Your armor is all the way who you are.
All the way. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. I, again, there's no way Filoni would let something slide. And that's why I think it's important and means something. And then they're lost. They have no world, like you said.
This is the way it feels like. Again, that could be something that's a traditional Mandalorian thing, but that also could be like a, you know, I will counter your Game of Thrones with some Battlestar Galactica.
Nice.
The So Say We All.
Yeah.
You know, that is really coming. That is really Adama coming from a, we are fractured and barely alive. We absolutely need unity. So we need to say a thing that reminds us of that unity. And the, this like is the way that. Totally had that feeling of like,
it did.
Let's remind one another, these are the choices we've made, and that's the way forward.
I love that. No, I this is the way it's been used a lot in this last 4 or 5 days.
this is the way, and I have spoken. A Twitter war.
I think you're right. This isn't, we didn't hear it in Clone Wars, we didn't hear it in Rebels, but this is the way forward means it has a lot of weight to that.
Yeah.
Which when they reveal themselves, and again, we hear your secrets, our secrecy is our survival. When they blow that secrecy and for the confirmation of, nope, this is the way.
Yeah.
That means it means a lot.
Yeah. Did the armor okay this, or is this our new Vizsla going? No, I believe more in my idea that our strength used to be in our numbers, and it needs to be again.
And there's this conversation I would love to have with you here. I don't know the answers. We grow up and now listening. Mandalorian culture. Well, they're warlike, right? That's what we hear. They're warlike. They're a warlike culture, and they do. They get in a lot of wars. They like their armor, and
especially back in the day,
Jedi kicked their butts. So they built armor to make it, you know, and they conquered the galaxy. And by the time you get to Clone Wars, Sidin is bringing the new Mandalorian way, and that goes, you know, Bo-Katan's against her own sister, and then we all know this. Bo-Katan ends up coming back around, but it's Bo-Katan at the end of Rebels is represents to me this new way of it wasn't like my sister wasn't, we didn't want to fight and be warlike, but we're not losing any pride. It's to me similar to the Jedi of, we have this great power, how do you use it?
Right.
We have this great culture, we have these great skills as warriors, how do we use it? And so the moment of them all emerging, number one, cool. Two, this is the way.
Yeah.
We are going to, you have made a decision that is based out of honor and based out of your own choice to the Mandalorian to go against, to stand up against these people. We're going to support you. And this is the way forward. We're warlike, but for good causes, honor. And when it comes time to do the right thing, it was just very interesting to me when you throw it in conjunction to, you know, with the Clone Wars stuff.
Yeah, and just such a vote of confidence to say, okay, you could bow down to this Imperial remnant. You could follow the guild code.
Yeah.
You could follow our new code where we hide, and then having all these Mandalorians go, nope, we support you in doing what we think is the right thing.
Yeah.
And not even clear on whether the Mandalorians are like, yes, he kidnapped the baby back, so or if it's just that they're aware that he is being hunted, and they're like, no, you hunt one of us, you hunt all of us.
It's one of our own, yeah.
And you know exactly where they're coming from, I think, is going to get fleshed out a lot more as time goes by. But it is so powerful for them to go, like, let's push back against all these ideas and say, this is who we are.
Yeah, because they establish the stake. Even with the whistling birds, these are very rare. Use them sparingly. And he uses them to save the child. Like, it just keeps stakes, and then this is what we're losing by deciding to go this right. way. It's
yeah, and you'll have to over find over. You know, yeah, you'll have to find a new place for the yeah. covert. Yeah,
yeah.
The last big canon thing that I wanted to highlight is that the Mandalorian did not want the Mudhorn as a signet because right. it was not an honorable kill, because he was saved by an enemy.
The enemy.
Why would an enemy save you? It did not know it was my enemy.
Mm.
So I took this as more possible evidence. I could be totally wrong.
Right.
But where I'm enjoying taking it is that this group of Mandalorians do perceive Force users, maybe Jedi in particular, as enemies,
mm-hmm.
but this thing is young and innocent, and it doesn't know, it has not, you know, signed on to the Jedi code,
yeah.
but that you get between the wars with the past of the Jedi, with, do these Mandalorians think it was a dark period that they let Maul lead them?
Right.
You know?
Yes, I forget that.
Are yeah. they aware, is Vader personally involved in the shattering of Mandalore? Right. With their entire history, both Jedi and Sith, with Force users, is that a rule of this specific Mandalorian,
mm-hmm.
of this group, that Force users are the enemy?
I love that take. I'm going to support it. You win that round. It was one of my questions I had for this episode, and this is why I like taking a couple of days and watching it again and discussing and thinking of it here. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I personally, in the moment, overlooked the history.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why is he enemy? Why is he? Well,
yeah, is it just because he was the bounty, and the bounty is he's the prey, and I'm the hunter in that situation?
It could very well be that as well, but I really think, you know, for him to refer as the capital T capital E enemy to the armor means yeah.
It just seems stronger than like I feel like if Horatio Sands saved him, he wouldn't be like the enemy saved me. He'd be like, it was shameful. The bounty helped me. The prey helped me when I was supposed to be the hunter.
Yeah. Which might answer why he was processing with Quill, too, about what, you know, tell me again. I don't understand. And how he can, you know, he feels it. He knows. I still think he knows what's going on.
Oh,
he's not like, yeah, baby, just is there some kind of magical power in the galaxy?
Yeah.
But trying to process for himself, like, oh, am I trying to save someone that would one day in the past try to kill me?
Or, yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
it ties to something else we would probably talk about the Mandalorian's view of Jedi and the Force. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get into some themes, which mm-hmm. you and I have danced around and said one of our catchphrases here on Force Center. Yeah. We'll talk about that soon.
We'll talk about that soon.
But soon has come to now, so let's talk about some of the big themes. There are a couple, but they're kind of interlocking this idea of hunter and prey.
Yeah.
Which gets played out really, explicitly with the two Mandos fighting over one another. And you get to see the Mando being both hunter and prey of like, well, by rescuing the baby, I'm hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I'm caught doing that, I am immediately going to become prey.
Right.
And the armor saying that's a courageous way to live. Lots of different reflections of that.
Big risk there.
But then kind of in combination to hunter and prey, I felt like there was this huge theme of being seen versus being enclosed.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a couple people reminding the Mandalorian that he is going to be seen. Like first we have him walking through town.
Yeah.
With the Baby Yoda wide out in the open. And like my wife was like, close the baby.
Close the thing. I was too. I was like, close it. Close it. What are you doing?
But that's a part of this tension.
Yeah.
And then we hear her say like, this man, the new armor is really going to make you be seen. I'm paraphrasing what she said.
I got half the quote. Armor will draw, quote, many eyes.
Yes, I must warn you, it will draw many eyes.
There you go.
And then one of my favorite lines of the episode, when he walks in and everybody turns to look at him into the bar, and they all hate you, Mando.
By the way, Carl Weathers giving me all the best Carl Weathers. The whole sequence, which is wonderfully over the top. It is prequel level, Palpatine level to me, almost. It's hard to top Palpatine, but just that, like, you're the best client in the world. Like, I was eating up every bit of his grief cargo stew.
Yeah. On there. Take you to see the Twi'leks, steaming.
healing baths
of the Twi'leks. Yeah. But
I love that.
So you get reinforced that armor is going to make him be seen.
Yeah.
That he is known and hated.
Yeah.
And by everyone. in the bar.
That's great. Carly Simon's You're So Vain was playing in my head as he walks in.
You probably think this bounty is about you, don't you? Don't you? But then I feel like it's been growing in general in the show, but felt more explicit in this episode that there is a tension to the Mandalorian's character about whether or not he wants to be enclosed, whether or not he wants to be in the armor. So we have all of these different shots, especially in chapter two, of when the baby basket is open and him looming in front of the baby.
Right.
We finally get to see the full super battle droids.
Right.
We see the Mandalorian being contained in that little bunker.
Right.
In the door shape of the bunker, even visually rhymes with the armor that is being made at the exact time. His new chest plate, has the actual same shape. So it is connecting the trauma of being sealed in somewhere for safety when you are young with being sealed into your armor, which should be your identity.
Yeah.
You get that combined with the Mando as a child having the exact same perspective of the super battle droid that Baby Yoda has had of him.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it resonates on lots of levels. One being just getting that clear idea of I don't ever want any creature to look up at me the way I looked up at that battle droid.
Mm.
That's not what I want to be.
Yeah.
But then going forward in the series, this tension for him of does he want to be a never helmet taker off?
Yeah.
Does he want, is for him, is the armor strength, is it who he is?
Yeah.
Or is it something he has to seal himself in because of that trauma of what happened to him when he was a child?
100% on board with you here, because number one, that line she says to him, has your helmet ever been removed by others? Pin that to a wall.
Right.
Because I think that's going to come back later in this show.
Yeah.
But I want to talk too about even just the flashback, because I think it ties into what you're saying here. I heard someone in a review of this episode say, I don't really like that we're getting the same exact flashback thing. The clink. And I believe in my heart it is not just done on purpose stylistically and kind of a cool reveal, but to me, I took it as the Mandalorian is forcing himself to relive that trauma that formed him.
Yeah.
He is staring at the mallet, whatever, coming down. Clank. With each pounding thing, he is going back to what hurt him and also what made him. So it would definitely tie into what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was locked away.
Yeah.
And now do I want to be that anymore? I think that's the question. And he was locked away. First, he's been locked away as a Mandalorian. My armor has lost its integrity. Now, you're walking into the party, shining bright, and everyone knows what you are. They know, but there's no mistake.
I am wearing a target.
Well, I am wearing a target.
It's who I am.
I absolutely think I'm more interested in those flashbacks for what it is teaching us about what he thinks about himself than, you know, who might rescue him, though that's a great question.
Yeah.
And it's also cool to see battle droids, by the way. It's
super cool to see battle droids.
I actually want to have the prequels remade as much as I love them now. Anyways, big win on that, Joseph. I think you're on to something real important there.
Yeah, and it ties into the hunter and prey theme, right? Because
absolutely,
when he's a child, he's the prey. And as the adult, he wants to be the hunter. And I agree with you. I don't think this is like PTSD. Like every time he hears armor hammered, he is revisiting that memory because he is trying to decide how much it shapes him.
Yeah.
And I think right now he thinks it is a good thing. He thinks I am the armor.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing for me when you say put a pin in it about the never taking the helmet off.
Yeah.
Are we going to a moment where he gets that place of like the Satine level of Mandalorian strength of I am strong.
Mm.
The armor is a tool. And yes, it's a part of my culture. It's a part of who I am.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be all of who I am. And there can be the power of being safe behind the armor. And there can be the power of taking the armor off and saying, I still have power.
And letting someone else take it off, too.
I mean, that's a big thing, right?
This is the way. This is the way.
Yeah. And this is a new way.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? You touched on it. Let's talk about it. The amazingly well constructed that we get a little bit more information on that same flashback, and it pretty much universally led Star Wars fans, it seems, to the thought,
yeah,
who is going to rescue him?
Yes. And so, perfect. Because
yeah,
I've heard Yoda. Well, that makes sense, but I think we would have had... I'd want a little bit more recognition when he sees the baby, unless that him holding the finger out and at the end of episode one has something to do with like, wait a minute, Ahsoka. Yeah, because Filoni's there.
Yeah.
That would make sense. It would be
Hayden
really
Christensen
cool.
has been around a lot. So I had a nerd moment of like,
yeah,
what if Anakin, wouldn't that be insane if just blue lightsaber, the hero's blade cuts through that and it's and nothing it's to Anakin, Anakin Skywalker. He can't ever remember this. Would never think about
I
that.
I thought about that.
But to the kid, it'd be like, huh?
That'd be great.
It would be amazing.
Kenobi, I've heard.
Kenobi,
too, as well.
Of course, would be great. And it absolutely might be. But it, for me, again, putting on like the narrative hat, that would be cool for us. But would it work with what we know so far about The Mandalorian? Because he sees, Force users as at least dubious.
Yeah, at least
if not
dubious.
The enemy.
He just called one the enemy. Yeah,
that, I was rescued by the dubious.
Yeah.
He's at least, so, and that
you
would imprint.
Ignore, you
right?
can't ignore that.
Right? That would imprint some amount of positivity.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be rescued by a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Right? And
well,
I think.
Yeah, because, yeah, well, yes, thank you. Because this is why we love theories at Force Center, but you have to tie them to the themes and the narrative that's being told to you or presented to you. Yeah, it would make sense. He's a foundling.
Yeah. We haven't, in that flashback, we haven't seen any Mandalorians in armor.
Yeah.
We're assuming that he is a born and bred blood Mandalorian, but maybe a Mandalorian rescues him in an unrelated place.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe it is. You know, there's a lot of mystery there about exactly how that all works. Maybe they're going to, there's to me a possibility that Favreau and Filoni want to reclaim the more Legends of You idea that it is a world and a place, but it's also a culture that you can join.
Which would put Filoni at odds with George a little bit, right? But yeah, because in Clone Wars, a lot was made that, hey, they're all white, blonde hair, blue eye kind of creatures, you know, humans or whatever, creatures. but then by Rebels, we see Sabine and her family. It's a variety going on, but it's all tied to born on Mandalore or Concord Donald kind of stuff.
Into the Mandalorian territories,
So this is introducing absolutely this new concept here of literally this foundling. So that is, I'm expecting a Mandalorian.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm excited to get that information. I'm not making a prediction about because that could absolutely be a Mandalorian territory that it's during the Clone Wars, so they're not armored up.
Yeah.
And it's a member of Death Watch who rescues him. It could be on the other side that he isn't a, you know, blood and bone Mandalorian and he entered the culture, and I'm really interested to see how they go with that one.
It could be young Bo-Katan. It could be Pre Vizsla. It'd be funny if Favreau actually playing Pre Vizsla. even though I'm pretty sure he voiced Paz, but so I'm definitely look. If it's Ahsoka standing there, we get a live action. I'm
so
gonna
cool.
go wow, and my girlfriend's gonna go who's that, and I'd be like, you have a lot to watch. It doesn't quite fit for me.
You
a
know,
Jedi
if we're going to see a Jedi in some way, it might be cooler if there's a Jedi in the background fighting the battle droids with some Mandalorian who rescues him, or maybe a Mandalorian rescues him, and then a Jedi's got a problem with that Mandalorian, so he gets to see the Jedi as the enemy. But there's some ties between this and Solo in its, the movie Solo in its Western themes, right?
Yeah.
And there's that great moment that you and I have both talked about in Solo where Han sees on the battlefield of Mimban, sees Beckett in kind of silhouette at the top of the hills, blasting people away and spinning his blasters. And you're seeing that moment where Solo's like, that's Ba-da. What I want to be.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we aren't going to get some Mandalorian in full armor rescuing the kid and having that shot of, that's what I want to be.
Absolutely.
That's what power and safety is.
Yeah.
Is being that. And that's what I want to be.
Seems like a theme.
Yeah. One other theme that I noted is just that idea of which code do you break, which I think we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
You know, but this episode is so heavy with he is trapped between you do not break the guild codes. You do not break this new Mandalorian codes.
A lot of sins to be had.
Yeah, a lot of sins. Any other big thematic ideas that you wanted to touch on before we move on?
No, you really touched on all the ones I wanted to get with the Mandalorian ones. So there's a lot of ones that are just easy and present. That's why I love the client line. That's kind of one of the to me. We talk going in. You were that hotel room in Chicago. Like this seems to be about identities and rediscovering the identities. That's the overriding thing of this whole show to me. That's why the client stuff is exciting when he challenges them. But then I was really excited with just the Mandalorian stuff because it's all themes and codes. With
nice and juicy. Yeah. So Deborah Chow, this is her big
premiere. Yeah.
And people seem to really be loving the direction on this episode. Mm-hmm. I think, extra attention because it is the first woman directing a live action Star Wars and that she's going to be directing Obi-Wan Kenobi. So getting a lot of people excited. Were there any directorial choices or moments? We discuss this every episode because it's such an interesting slate of directors. Yeah. What choices or moments directorially spoke to you?
I thought she handled the action stuff really well. And a lot of the focus coming in on her resume of work, we talked about it even just like, hey, you know, she deals with a lot of characters alone or conflicted. Jessica, I always go to Jessica Jones and, dark, depressed type of stuff. to see her make get through these action sequences in such a fun way, which it was really like that pulse pounding, especially when I kept calling it video, like he was on story mode because it just was, he was killing everyone really easily, but it was just like total video game vibe. I thought her choices in those sequences were what made me really excited for Obi-Wan because I want the dark reflective campfire Obi-Wan, but there's got to be some action.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so I was happy with
looks
that.
Like there's going to be good action. I liked how many shots, either were really letting us see that he is being stared at and observed and building the tension that way. Mm. That nice long walk into town with Baby Yoda and the choice to have the canister, the baby bucket canister open.
Great.
And then obviously walking into the bar. That combined with lots of times and places where he is kind of contained and claustrophobic, right? So even the way the action is shot, it is literally because it's in a building.
Mm.
But he only had so much room to maneuver in the building and then obviously hiding in the speeder. And there's so many shots where, you can write that this is the action that happens, but she shot it anyway to remind us of this tension between being stared at and being kind of claustrophobic about it at the same time. And then one of the things that I really appreciated in the action scene is a couple different really great shots where she just left the dead trooper in the foreground.
Yes.
And for Star Wars, Star Wars always wrestles with the, like, it's a fun space adventure where they blow up a whole planet and thousands and millions die. Yay, a fun romp. Don't think about it too much, says Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to choose when directors choose how much to remind you, like, he burned that guy alive. Yeah.
And it's, you hear this.
Like, there's this sizzle. And leaving those troopers in the foreground to let you sit with it's cool, but he fried that guy.
They don't fade away like video games. I always love talking because we talk Western samurais, the movie Lone Wolf and Cub keeps coming up as an example of this. John Wick, a lot of Taken in there too. Taken One.
Is
just going through you. Boom, 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 boom. There was a lot of that there.
Yeah. This is what is the most quick and resourceful way.
Yeah.
And also the way where I can use the most toys. All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the fun toy moments in just a minute, but right now we're going to take a quick break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back for more Mandalorian Report. We're going to dive into some of the fun stuff and some of the weird stuff that we like to talk about. So we've talked a lot about the action figure inspiration that everybody sensed and Favreau and Filoni confirmed. But we've also been both getting a heavy video game vibe.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Any favorite action figure and or video game moments?
I loved the droid as a horse and a cart, Western, very Young Guns 2 vibe of droid, drive, no, and then making it happen.
That's like, did you get that? Like, I want to buy the droid cart so I can act out with Baby Yoda hiding action.
So there was a lot of great Black Series. In fact, and then Black Series Rebel, our friends obviously, Hasbro Black Series is going to release the heavy Mandalorian gunner, Paz Vizsla figure.
Okay.
That's out there. It looked like Black Series figures landing.
Nice. We talked about this line, but I gotta get one of those.
He's
not only a great action figure line, because it also is like, okay, well, that'll be the fourth version of the Mandalorian I buy, is the one where he finally does get a jetpack. But in terms of video games, it spoke so much to leveling up, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot of the leveling up progress that the Mandalorian is doing, with getting more armor and what side quest do I have to beat to get the jetpack so I can get up to the higher level to get access to that clue?
Love that.
And this might be partially just because I am in the middle of playing Jedi Fallen Order as we record this.
Oh yeah.
But it's obviously for fun, but I felt it so much more. The fact that he could have probably shot all of those stormtroopers.
Yeah.
But just like when I'm playing a video game, I want to kill them with all of my different skills. And use of my different abilities, right?
You're 100% right. I'm going to pull them to me. I'm going to push them away.
I want to knock one off
my lightsaber. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to hit one guy with another guy.
100%.
He's like, I want to use all my tools.
Yeah. That was great. That was great.
It's very good. Video game kills. All right. Let's talk about Grizzled Weirdos.
Yeah.
What were your favorite grizzled weirdo moments?
To me, it was Grief Karga. He's grizzled. He's grizzled. He's not the classic. You know, Quill's got that slow. We always seem to go slow. But Grief's been around. He's been around this galaxy, and I just liked the whole conversation. I really liked the. To me, it was the. And I'm rich too, which is it's the Bible in the chest that's going to save you from the bullet later. Right. I got it. I got it. Fun moment for me. But I really just the way he just is like suddenly like, hey, I'm rich too. He wants to retire and get out of it.
Right. That whole scene was great. That's going to be one of my favorite lines. You know, when Disney allows it, I hope that is a common gif. They all hate you, Mando. I think I can see that one being like,
I was about to,
hey, something good happened to me today. And then the gif. They all hate you, Mando.
After the first two episodes, I was hesitant to refer to him as Mando or the Mando because it was like, is this kind of disrespectful? Is it disrespectful to have him just like right from the beginning? Hey, Mando on the transmission.
That's his name to a lot of people. Yeah. And I loved the not only everything you're saying, the setup for that's going to save his life with the Beskar and the setup for like, this is why I'm in it is so I can take my cut.
Yeah.
But the utter clueless insensitivity of like, and I got some of the precious bounty of your people stolen when your people were crushed by the Empire. I've got some too, buddy. Like, come on, man.
And just the fact he was just like, he knows he sent everyone else in that room to go get the baby and perhaps even kill the Mando if necessary. Just he needed a winner to have the old kind of like, hey, you! I knew it was you all along. And I knew you were going to win.
I'm glad it was you, buddy.
Yeah, we got the Carl Weathers I was hoping for in this episode.
Since we're near the him getting shot moment, I think that is a we say grizzled weirdo and have fun with the kind of the funny lines or the weird lines. But I did like seeing the value of age, the wisdom, right? That he is clocking how everything's going. He's Grief Karga is the one who's smart enough to shoot the droid instead of trying to shoot the Mando.
Right.
He's the one who's like, okay, I see how this is going, so I'll intercept him at his ship. So we get to see him be wise and smarter than the thugs he hires.
Definitely.
But then the question that I've seen a lot of people asking, do you feel like the Mando shot him in the Beskar on purpose, or is that good Grief Karga luck?
I took it as good Grief Karga luck. I'll say that when Grief Karga says, because I'm your only hope, there's that part of me that was like, he might be right. You know, even though I know Mando's not going to stick with him and he's not going to, you know, that there might be, I'm your only hope to keep you alive in the guild, to keep you like, to stop what's happening to you. Like, there could be a lot of different ways.
You need money and you're only going to get it through me.
I'm your guy. That there could be a slight affinity. I just, though, at this point, at that particular point, I think Mando was shooting to kill.
I think Mando is shooting to get him off the damn ship.
Yeah.
And if he killed him, great. If he didn't, who knows? Maybe people are right and maybe it will come out that Mando spared him.
Could be
also be cool if Mando tried to lie.
Yeah.
Like, no, I shot you there on purpose. I was trying to spare you grief.
I shot you there on purpose.
Yeah. The other just weird, grizzled weirdo moment I liked was the client approaching Baby Yoda and having the creepy, yes, 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 yes. Like, so creepy wearing Herzog.
Yeah. Oh, he's killing it.
Good job being creepy.
Yeah.
All right. As we head toward wrapping up, we're going to talk about predictions for next chapter, future chapters, big picture. What predictions or even desires do you have based on this chapter?
I got to tell you, there's an ultimate goal with this Baby Yoda and whatever, kind of an investigation, almost an Obi-Wan Attack of the Clones investigation, right? But it seems to me along the way there's going to be more little things he gets in trouble. We know Cara Dune is coming.
Yeah.
We know that's this next episode. Disney did release a little, for the first time, some like forthcoming episodes.
Okay.
They're very vague.
Okay.
They're very vague. But it gives me a sense that along the big path is Baby Yoda, but along the way, he's going to get himself into some more junk. And I'm interested to see what he learns from each time and how he becomes more himself and more the new version of himself through these adventures. I'm excited about that. And I'll tell you right now, I hope Cara Dune sticks around.
Yeah, and isn't just like a...
Isn't just
she's there for these two chapters when he has the adventure on this planet kind of thing.
Because it was definitely sold... You got Mandalorian, IG-11 at his side, and Cara Dune on the other side. And so far, not been the case.
They might be shifting it around a little bit, but right now, that's the key art all over Disney is those three, the big three, right?
Yes.
So I really hope that as well. I'm very fascinated with the Mando perspective, because my mind went to, to the... Yeah, the story obviously is being teased that eventually we're going to figure out who wants Baby Yoda for what. But I don't feel like the Mandalorian's like, all right, let me put on my my hat and, light a vape pen or whatever, you know, a death stick and do some 1940s film noir investigating.
Right.
He's not a gumshoe. He's going to ground, right?
Yeah.
So that's my bias is that I feel like the character would just go like, where can I stick this baby?
Yeah.
And then maybe he already knows Cara Dune. Maybe he's going to run into her when he just... I just feel like the next place he would go is somewhere to hide or recoup.
Yeah.
Not for him going, I have to figure out the plot.
That's a great point. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So
you're right.
I think the plot is going to come... The Baby Yoda needs are going to come to him in the form of Moff Gideon tracking him down.
That makes sense.
And he's just going to go... try to get on with his life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it makes it the way the show, this is why I love the show more than I expected. It wasn't that I wasn't on board going in. It's just the way the chapters are laid out, everything. It is now very hard for me to predict. And I love that. And you listeners know I'm bad at predictions. Number one and two, I don't ever want to predict it. I don't want to be right too many times. Yeah. It's fun to be right every now and then, but I don't know. Like, Moff Gideon could not show up to the final episode at this point.
Part 8,
he could be the big final, big boss at the end of this video game.
Yeah, yeah. You have to hit him whichever spot is glowing or you won't die.
Force hold him.
I totally agree if I could be wrong, too. It could be that he's like, I'm going to go to somebody who knows about, I know this person from the past who knows about Force users.
Yeah.
I'm going to take him there and go, what's the deal with this thing?
Yeah.
You know, maybe. But I get more the sense that he is he's a linear guy of like, what's next?
Yeah.
So that's really fascinating to not know. The Signet now is becoming a dangling thread, right? You've got the when, where, how, who will take off his helmet, because we're going to see Pedro Pascal.
At some point.
Yeah. And it's something the character's obviously working toward, as we talked about. But then the Signet, too. Well, now we get a little bit better sense of, like, he is earning honor. Honor points to unlock the Signet. More video game stuff.
Honor XP.
And it is, a Signet is usually something that you have bested, right?
Yeah.
A worthy challenge you have overcome.
Yeah.
So do you have any guesses or desires to what his Signet should be?
I think his Signet might be, it might just be a picture of Baby Yoda.
That was going to be my thing.
Because I saved him.
I want the Signet
it's
to
not what
be
I defeated,
Baby Yoda.
That's what I saved.
I want that to be the last shot.
Yes.
It's the getting the Signet of Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will happen. I don't know if that's a solid prediction, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, it'll probably be a Sarlacc pit or something.
Yeah, it'll be an exact picture of Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
I defeated Werner Herzog. So any other predictions for next chapter or upcoming, big picture stuff?
I think he's going to learn a lot from Cara Dune.
Yeah. My only other big picture prediction or maybe desire I was left with after this episode, again, putting myself in the age, perspective of Favreau and Filoni. It feels like it's going to a Blues Brothers place. The classic Blues Brothers, like, look, we're kind of shady guys trying to do something noble.
Yeah.
We're committed to that mission. Our mission from God. And while doing that, we piss off everyone we encounter.
Yes.
Until the end is the entire world coming after us. And it, knowing the influence that Blues Brothers was for people of our general grizzled weirdo age that you and I are, Ken.
Yeah.
that I wonder if it's going towards the guild's after him. The Empire is after him. Arm of the New Republic is after him.
Yeah, those raiders.
It looks like he's going to encounter, yeah, according to the toys. Yes. Yeah. And other places. But yeah. Yeah. That would be fun for me if it really was like one guy and his baby Yoda against the world.
It'll be like the series finale of Seinfeld. Just, yeah, everyone testified against him.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to start to wrap up.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pull the curtain back. I meant to ask you before we recorded.
Oh, yeah.
If you wanted to touch base on any of the bigger debates going around on The Mandalorian, or if you want to save that for a little bit, because right now I'm hearing a lot of debate about people saying this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
The real Star Wars is back. Not just saying, yeah, I like Mandalorian, but Mandalorian is the truth and other Star Wars is, yeah, not. So there's that. And then there's a lot of discussion about representation and diversity.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, I want to acknowledge to our listeners that we are keyed, yeah, in and listening to those debates.
Yeah.
Do you want to dive in now, or do you want to give it a little bit of time?
I think in terms of the representation and diversity, one comes a lot. I just had a conversation with a friend off air about it, about the female, lack of female characters other than the armorer, basically, right now. I get it. I'm not pushing back against it at all. The way the story's been told and being told, I'm like, give me all 8 episodes first before I make a big judgment, though I get its importance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't want to take it, and I'm not the one to comment on it. You know what I mean?
Got it.
So it's present, but I'm just like, you had said it earlier, like, if we didn't know what was coming,
yeah,
we'd have a problem. If this was 2 hours, if this was all we got, all right, but they've made, and yes, anyone else could have been, you know, Horatio Sanz could have been, Brian Posehn could have been, I get that. But it's out there, it's there. I think it's going to start by next week, boom, it'll change dramatically.
Yeah, I think
it doesn't comfort people who are missing it.
Yes.
And I'm not taking away your problem with that or trying to comfort you. I'm just saying I think by the end of this road, we'll be in a better spot.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I want to be sure to celebrate the positivity of the diversity behind the camera, which, mm-hmm, is groundbreaking for Star Wars.
A lot of second unit female directors.
Right. And, you know,
Deborah Chow
and Bryce Dallas Howard and all sorts of great diversity behind the camera. So in other discussions, I don't want to lose the positivity of that. And yeah, I'm in the camp of I want to see how all the other characters flesh out.
Yeah.
And see exactly who Cara Dune is, exactly the kind of character Ming-Na Wen presents.
Yeah.
Is.
Natalie Tenna as the Twi'lek is coming.
Yes. Yeah. It looks like the character that we've seen in a couple of trailers that may or may not be a part of this upcoming Cara Dune.
Oh, you're talking about Julia Jones.
ATSC Raider. Yeah. So there are more women characters, mm-hmm, coming. Even if the back half of this is chock full of women with a diversity of characters, a diversity of perspectives, I just want to say that I get and understand the perspective of this is still the beginning of a story. And for people who are just tuning into Disney Plus because they heard this was awesome and don't do or listen to a weekly Star Wars podcast and don't already have Cara Dune's character name memorized, I can totally understand how people would come to this and say, hey, all of these actors are awesome, but why Werner Herzog could have been Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah.
Any number of, you know, people could have been Greef Karga or, you know, Dr. Pershing. There is, I think, an understandable desire to go to say, it's great that some kick-ass women are coming that are all badasses.
Yeah.
But I'll just speak for myself personally. I want to make sure not just that I see a variety of people of all kinds, women, people of color, everything. I want to see people getting to play all kinds of people.
Right.
Super excited that I know for sure some women who are ass kickers are coming.
Right.
But I'd also be happy to see, you know, a grizzled weirdo woman who's down with the Empire and is taunting the Mandalorian. I'd be happy to see, you know, Dr. Pershing, who you don't know, you know. Are they just devoted to science or are they, you know, a good, like, oh, any, a woman could be any of those characters, so I understand that concern.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not here to comfort anyone. Though the Ugnaught crowd, they're happy.
Yes.
They're happy indeed. Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, we want to address the conversations that are out there.
Yeah.
Because it's important. It's part of why we do this, because this isn't just a review.
Right.
This isn't a review. This is a discussion.
Yeah. And Star Wars impacts everything.
Everything.
In lots of ways. So yeah. I think those are just some of our thoughts if people are curious. And also, the conversation is not done, as you pointed out. Now, the other one, the This Is Star Wars. Do you want to talk about it?
I think I'll try to address this. It's making me upset. It's making me upset. Because, number one, this is a great thing. This show's going great.
Yeah.
There's a big kind of unification happening. Because, again, as much as I love Last Jedi and love Solo and love what we do here, obviously there was some contentious feelings.
A diversity of opinions.
Yes. So to have everyone kind of on board is great. I'm not surprised, because some of these people are people I know, and I'm not surprised that they're using it as a chance to bash what came before it, including bashing, not bad, but continuing this narrative of Kathleen Kennedy shouldn't have been in charge. Kathleen Kennedy said to Favreau, you need to work with Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni has admitted that. By the way, I can tell you for a fact they fought on set, and Favreau had to remind Filoni who he was. I know that for a fact. And so, to not give Kathleen credit for going, hey, this guy is the part of the future of this franchise. Yeah. I get upset. I'm upset. And you can hear my tone. I'm upset. And I saw some tweets of a low-level director who tweeted, who made an average comedy about the prequels years ago, using this to bash what came before. I guarantee you, you listen to their reviews, they're missing bigger themes. And the themes I've been present for 5 years, and this is just to me a continuation of success. And I don't think you should trust anyone that says this has been better than the last few years. You might like it better and it might connect it better, but dig in a little deeper. Sorry. End of rant.
No, yeah, the rants are welcome.
this guy really upset me over the weekend.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. And I've seen it a lot, and some of it is just the way we talk about media as a society that I've gone on about on Star Wars Counseling, of we're trained that the stronger, firmer way to speak is to be declarative.
Yes,
and to say your opinion is, this is the best Star Wars.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people are just doing that because that's kind of societally how we've been taught to speak. But from my Obi-Wan Kenobi, certain point of view, why a certain point of view matters to me is because it's richer to go, the Mandalorian is really working for me in a way that The Last Jedi doesn't. Then you can say to a friend, why? And you can hear their perspective.
Yes.
You might not agree with it, but it opens the door to a conversation.
Yeah.
All of the Disney movies have been garbage. The Mandalorian is the only good Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now the door is closed. Now two people are mad about a thing that they both think is good.
Yes.
So many of us think The Mandalorian is good. And I understand there's some people who don't. But so many of us think The Mandalorian
and
is good.
By the way, I have seen a couple that are like, I'm not on board.
I'm not on board. Yeah. Fair enough. But like, why? This is a chance for unity. Like you're saying, we should be celebrating that we are all enjoying The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
For are different reasons. If you are the age that we are and you grew up with the original trilogy, this is obsessed with the what if conversations of our playgrounds. But you know, if you grew up with the prequels and battle droids are really being presented in this way that they can make or break or shape the life of a Mandalorian, and you're excited about it from that. There's so many people are just, Baby Yoda is amazing. And that is my entry point. Like there's so many different entry points into the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
That just for me, like enjoying different parts of Star Wars and recognizing that you enjoy them because of who you are and because of how Star Wars came into your life is a positive. And it makes me sad to see that positivity and that possibility for unity and understanding to be taken away by needing to exclude other Star Wars while you express that you like this Star Wars. It's a loss to me.
It's a big... you're absolutely right. Because some of the people saying this stuff, even off camera, even like, I think the Mandalorian's going to unify everyone. I'm like, okay, great. So here it is. It kind of has. And then you're still burning the world down. It says a lot about you than more does about the movies. But your Star Wars buffet theory of just enjoy it. You know, like I'm enjoying Star Wars Resistance less this season, but that I, you know, that doesn't, it's not like I'm like pointing back at Rebels and going, that's the way you should have done it. I'm just not having the time. I'm rushed. I'm busy and I'm not seeing it as much. So I just, it irks me. And, but Joseph, we have to, you know, be secure with ourselves to just enjoy what we enjoy and let the other people not like, or start their own conversations. It's, but I'm not going to lie. It's, I'm glad you brought it up, because it's taking away 2% of the fun of The Mandalorian to me.
Right.
When I go online, and I'm not talking YouTube channels and podcasters, I'm talking people I deal with in my regular life.
Yeah.
Was this so hard for Disney? They could have done this for the last 5 years. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
Oh, come into my cave and let's talk.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like, yeah, let's go to that Star Wars buffet. You eat your Star Wars taco, I'll eat my Star Wars pizza. They're both awesome. There's a taco pizza that we can have too,
filled with clothes. and different conversation. Like it, I hear a lot of you know, you and I, you address it. We're very positive in this, and sometimes like, well, it's all positive. This need that is it's just human nature. But I used to produce that show, Movie Fights. It created an atmosphere, not the people on the show, not the show, but the fan base started to need to feel everything's a debate. Everything's a point.
Yeah.
Everything's to be judged and determined. And I think what we at Force Center have always done is let's have a long form discussion about what we love about this.
Yeah.
Including the negative things. You and I will choose. And when Jennifer's present too, hey, we didn't like this book as much as we thought. How do we say that in a way that keeps the discussion going?
Right.
And it's not necessary to have a debate. I hear this all the time now with Collider Jedi Council and you coming on the reviews over there, where it's like, yeah, but I needed a dissenting opinion. You don't. You don't need it.
You really don't.
And if you listen, there are discussions going back and forth sometimes about different interpretations and this and that. It's a bigger discussion to be had, but let's just enjoy it. And that's what you and I and a lot of others are doing. But
yeah,
let's enjoy it.
Yeah. I think what we're saying in the big picture is, for us, the salute didn't work, but we choose to say that in a respectful way.
The heavy just Mando gunner lands like Julie Andrews in a 1967 Disney movie. All right? I didn't like it, but I'm going to be okay.
Seeing that heavy gun, speaking of getting back into positivity, right?
Because was amazing.
How many times have we used that in Battlefront 2?
Yes.
To see,
The heavy is my assault class.
Yeah, not right?
But that's my class of trooper.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
And the Remnant troopers have a blaster that you can get in. Anyway, the point is, we want to celebrate Star Wars, and we want other people to celebrate Star Wars, and we want to discuss why we each individually are attracted to different parts of it, so we can all find the parts of the Star Wars buffet that we want to stuff in our face. All right, we're going to wrap up with a weird, fun, personal question inspired by this episode. So if in this Mandalorian culture, your signet is something that maybe tried to kill you, but you overcame, what is your signet, Kent?
Oh, boy. I was scared. How do you put L.A. traffic? It almost gets me every time.
Your signet can be a text like, sorry, I guess I'm going to be a few minutes late. Yeah.
My signet can be Barham and Olive, which is the streets here, once wonderfully referenced in 30 Rock as a problem.
Yeah, an intersection you just can't get around. I think right now in this wonderful time where there's so many things to enjoy, both Star Wars and many other kinds of media, I'm loving the hell out of Watchmen, all sorts of things, Doctor Who coming back. Oh, and then just like, you know, wanting to have a life with my wife and friends career goals and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I think my signet would just be a clock. It would be time.
That's great.
If I can defeat time. Well, I feel like time is trying to defeat me and I want to win. Yeah.
Your great special, Joseph Scrimshaw versus time.
That's right.
There you go.
I forgot I already did that. Anyway.
Too busy.
That is our episode. So please do check Ken out at all your places. Yeah. Where can people find you?
Just easily go to kennapsack.com. I'll be at the Schmodown Spectacular on December 7th for the Star Wars event. I'll be calling the action. And then there's a fan expo before. I'll be there as well. It's going to be fun.
Nice, nice. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out all of my shows and comedy albums and other podcasts on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. I have a bunch of live shows coming up, including a great holiday show here in Los Angeles called CNC Holiday. And then I've got a New Year's Eve show. And right now my obsessed podcast is an interview with Jennifer Murrow, the writer, one of the writers of Forces of Destiny. She really helped develop it with the Lucasfilm team and wrote all the episodes in the first half of the block there. She has a great discussion with me on Obsessed about jazz and Hollywood in general. So go check that out, josephscrimshaw.com. And of course, you can find us everywhere as Force Center Pod. You can find us on Anchor. That's our main podcast home. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, all Force Center Pod. Until the next chapter of the Mandalorian Report, we have spoken.